Mr. Coulson, your 2 o'clock interview is here.
Thank you, Greta. Send him in. Good afternoon, Mr. Barton.
Hawkeye, please.
Very well, Hawkeye. Please have a seat.
Thanks.
I was just looking over your resume here, and I'd like you to clear up a few things. What is it you, what can you do exactly?
I shoot things with my bow.
Right, I got that. Like a regular bow?
Yes, I have really good aim.
All right. All right, well, we here at the Avengers Project are kind of looking for superhuman powers. Do you have any superpowers?
I have super good aim.
Is that a power, really?
That's my power. I'm the best in the world. Nothing beats me.
Except anyone with a gun.
Well, yeah, but besides that, nothing.
Okay. What about something that's arrow-proof?
Yeah, arrow-proof is kind of like my kryptonite.
And guns.
Yeah, and guns. Guns are my red kryptonite.
Well, I think we can work with that. Are you willing to acquire powers? Here's an OSHA list of nuclear biomedical research facilities with the worst safety records. Most of them are in Queens. You can't fly, can you? You'll need the subway map.
No, 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 no. Bows and arrows and my super aim is all I need.
All right. Well, we've got two real superhumans and a guy in hardware the military can't afford. A guy with a bow, I'm not sure how you'll fit in there.
Oh, I can keep up. I have explosive arrows, too.
And you made these explosives yourself?
Is that legal?
Not really.
Then no.
So, arrows and explosive arrows. What else have you got?
Oh, I got a lot of arrows. Grappling hook arrow, sonic arrow, tracer arrow.
Do you have a boxing glove arrow?
That's ridiculous.
Sorry. So what happens when you run out of arrows?
What do you mean?
I mean, you shoot arrows. I get that. But when you run out of them, what do you do?
No, I don't follow you, sorry.
Okay. You have arrows.
Okay.
And then you don't have arrows.
Why not?
Hypothetically.
All right.
So, what do you do then?
Well, I'm also a people person.
Hmm. All right, you're in.
Greta, cancel my 2:30 appointment. We found somebody for the job.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Mr. Queen. Thank you for coming, but the position has been filled.
Well, thanks for calling me back. Now I better get over to the sporting goods store. There's a sale on boxing gloves.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Greetings, I am biodegradable and microwave safe. I am Chris.
Hello, I have a lovely bunch of coconuts, and I'm no longer on fire. I'm Pete.
And tonight, we are wearing our undies on the outside.
We certainly are.
And that is in keeping with our theme, which is what?
Superhero games!
We will be talking about all manner of superhero games in this month's installment of the Rule Zero podcast.
This month's Turgid Edition.
So I have to check before we go any further. Is your phone off?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm just checking.
You're hilarious.
Just saying.
I'm laughing on the inside.
So, big news item for our talk-in, newsflash, relevant to our discussion tonight. It has been determined through scientific study that Batman is in fact not a superhero, but is instead a very wealthy ninja.
I'm sorry, Chris, but this just in, Superman is actually a giant phallus and a red and blue Duralex condom.
Ah, you and your Batman fetish.
You and your Superman fetish? What is it? Is it the red undies? Is it the tights?
Hey, Batman wears his undies on the outside too, you know.
Yes, but they match the overall outfit.
It's about surprise. I mean, wouldn't you be surprised to find a red Speedo just leaping toward you?
It, by itself, yes, yes, I would.
It takes a lot to come from a distant galaxy as a child and grow up passing completely for human.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Yeah, he passed for human.
With massive powers right. That are completely incomprehensible to the average mortal. You know, all Batman has is a bunch of toys.
But he has a lot of fun toys, and he has a lot more than just toys. Because if he just had toys, he could just stay at home.
That's true. Yep. But, you know, let's examine motivations here.
Okay.
You know, why does Superman do what he does? Well, he saves people left and right because he's the only one who can. He knows that he can never rest, and he's always working himself to the bone because he knows that somebody out there needs his help, and as long as it's possible for him to save them, he's the one who has to do it. You know, Batman beats up clowns in between gala luncheons.
Oh, Chris, you ignorant slut.
You went
so lucky. Okay. Let me just say that what Batman does is essentially the same thing as John Walsh does in real life. Okay? He goes out and he does something. He's taking an active stance against a crime that was committed against his family.
Okay.
Okay? And that's an incredible thing because, let's face it, there are not one in 300,000 or 300 million people who will go out and do the same thing. He could have gone the Frank Castle route and gone all, you know, let's blow up things and shoot a bunch of bad guys, but he didn't. He chose that he would take the higher ground on this. And in doing so, he has created for himself, well, he's created for all of us, a paragon. He's gone to a place where most human beings can go, but never have the motivation to go. Whereas Superman isn't human. I mean, that's ultimately it. You can't aspire to be like Superman because you'll never be like Superman. You can aspire to be like Batman.
Well, with enough money and, you know, all, dedicating your, you know, entire life to being super smart and lifting weights every day when you're 9.
Well, you know, as long as you've got the focus. It's not like, you know, you were some kind of pink alien that happened to look human enough that he could pass as human, which I find incredibly believable. As well as,
yeah,
you know.
No, because comics, man.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. But, you know, ultimately what you've got is you've got this guy who comes out of nowhere, crash lands in front, fortuitously in front of a couple who can't have kids, is raised in a red state, and is raised with his incredibly jingoistic values that aren't really, you know, reasonable in today's society. Whereas Batman changes. Batman can do things that Superman can't do because he's utilizing more of his brain than his quote-unquote God-given talents.
Okay. I'll give you that much.
Oh, but, and Superman's, you know, still a dick, by the way.
You know, you're still mad about that adopting Jimmy Olsen story. Look, that was a long time ago. Water under the bridge.
It's not that. It's the gold kryptonite. That's what I'm really upset about.
Which was the gold?
I don't remember.
Was that the one that made him the evil opposite Superman?
No, that's the black kryptonite. The gold kryptonite, like, grows his hair and his nails and does all sorts of...
Oh, that must be a hippie thing.
Yeah, I guess it must have been.
Well, you know, if he had to infiltrate a hippie den, he could use that.
I guess he could. But, you know, the flip side of that is I'm also kind of ticked off at the Batman storyline where he had to go jungle wear, which was essentially a Tarzan outfit with the Batman cowl.
Ah, okay.
So,
you know, and also Superman can disguise himself as Captain Marvel and vice versa.
No, he cannot.
Look, they're drawn exactly the same.
Nothing happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we're going to disagree on this one. But I will give you the fact that Superman would be more efficient in, say, a natural disaster, like the Japanese nuclear meltdown.
Okay.
I think Batman would be more efficient because Superman would fly over there. He would freeze breath the entire area. He would use his heat vision to carve all around the reactor. And then he would use his super strength to lift up the massive tons and tons of rock. And he would carry them out into space. And he would fly through space. And he would throw it into the sun. And Batman could have solved that problem with just one device. He would pick up his cell phone and call Superman.
Nice. Now, the interesting thing about Superman stopping this whole thing using his freeze breath and his heat vision doesn't really work against things like gamma radiation or X-rays or the heavy kind of rad that came out of that reactor. And while he was busy breathing on it, cutting away with it with his heat vision, his little laser beams that his little solar cells can suck up from the sunlight, he would still be killing thousands of people from the amount of radiation leaking out of his little frozen nuclear sickle.
Yeah, that's why he would get it into the sun very quickly. But,
oh, yeah, because that makes a huge amount of difference when radiation's moving at the speed of light.
Well, what would happen? You know, if our sun is going to be, you know, damaged by, you know, a few tons of radiation, then I think we should just pack it in now.
That's not the problem. The problem is that while he's doing all of this shit, melting down is still causing the reaction.
So he could, you know, water does block radiation, I believe, doesn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No. No, it doesn't. Lead blocks radiation.
Okay. Fair enough. Then he would fly to a lead place and get a bunch of lead.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know how he'd do that? He'd call Batman and go, I can't afford to get all this lead. Can you cover it? Oh, yeah. I'd be happy to. Can you save thousands of lives doing it? Why, yeah, I can. Then do it.
Touche. So what you're saying is it would be a two-way phone call.
I'm just saying that, you know, you got a situation going on here.
Well, I think we'll have to continue this another time because this talk ends getting mighty long.
I think you're right.
So, anyway, we're going to talk about superheroes today.
Yes, we are.
all day long, and I hope we get some good news out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of news, let's go into it.
Oh, good segue.
It is time for the news.
In comics news, Marvel plans to put out a Daredevil vs. Galactus one-shot, and it's called a one-shot for a reason. That's all it's going to take.
Okay, no, that is not actually news.
No, that would be hilarious, though. I think Daredevil should get the Captain Universe power.
You know, it might help, but I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough.
You never can tell.
I think maybe if Thor got the Captain Universe power, he could punch Galactus in the mouth.
Do you think that if Daredevil got the Captain Universe power, he could see? And if he did, would that totally screw up his ability to be effectively Daredevil?
You know, I don't think he has an ability to be effectively Daredevil, because he's one of the stupidest superheroes in comics.
That's harsh and completely unnecessary, when there are so many other stupid superheroes in comics. What about Mega?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I do take that back. Yeah, I'm sorry. But, you know, like, you know, speaking of coincidences, you were talking about Superman happening to look like a human.
Yes.
You know, Daredevil is blinded by a chemical radiation accident that happens to give him the power not to be blind.
Right.
And make no mistake, that's his only damn power.
It's
not being blind.
True. He's also a total pain in the backside.
I mean, you know, okay, so he's a super highly trained gymnast. Okay.
He's
that's,
a ninja.
You know,
he
anybody
actually
can
is a ninja.
He is a ninja. That's
he
true.
He actually is a ninja.
That's true. But what if he got blinded by this accident and then gained the power to run really fast? You know, how useless would that be?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the Wizard about that one.
Is he blind?
No, but that's how he got the power to be really fast.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing he wasn't blinded by that accident.
It's lucky, because he'd be running really fast and bouncing off of stuff.
Exactly like Daredevil would be. Although he would more be splatting into stuff. So anyway, yeah, we actually have real news.
It's true, we do, actually.
Yeah, the Avengers came out. It's like in its third week now, and it is still kicking butt.
And it is now the highest opening movie of all time.
Did it pass Harry Potter?
Yeah, passed Harry Potter.
And Dark Knight was behind Harry Potter, I believe.
It was just behind Harry Potter, so yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, grats to Marvel.
Indeed.
And, well, Disney. Yeah.
I'm going to give more of my grats to Marvel in this case. Because I'm going to give grats to Disney, I'm going to have to bring up the whole John Carter thing, and I don't want to do that right now.
Yeah. I enjoyed watching The Avengers, but there were a couple things that bothered me about it. You know, like Loki's plan was kind of half-baked, in my opinion.
Yeah, but you got to take into account that he's been through a lot lately.
Yeah, okay. It's not his week.
Sucked through a wormhole.
Yeah.
Encountered,
I guess,
basically a and oh, spoilers.
Oh, yeah. That's not... I'm going to bleep that out.
Good idea.
Although, if there's anybody left in America among our tens of listeners.
Yeah, exactly. All five of them?
Hey, you know what? We got some good press in the last episode, and we've passed being able to say we have ones of listeners.
It's true. We have. You now see tens.
We now have tens of listeners. And thank you guys for joining us, guys and women and those of ambiguous gender.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate the hits. We appreciate the downloads. And that was actually one of our news items was that, wow, the last episode really took off.
Yeah, we're really very happy with that. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
And we would love to get some feedback, and we will tell you how to do that at the end of the show.
Yep.
And, you know, Twitter, Facebook, you know the drill.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for that. Go see The Avengers, and we will probably spoil it next episode.
Yeah.
So because if you haven't seen it by, you know, the time it's been out for 2 months, you really don't care about it.
And somebody else has already spoiled it for you.
Yeah. Yeah, very likely.
Yep.
So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
What else we got?
The Pathfinder MMO Kickstarter.
Yes, the Pathfinder MMO has a Kickstarter. It has, according to the latest update on the page, it has 17 days to go. It has a goal of 50,000, and it has gotten almost twice that now.
Wow.
So it's got nearly 1,500 backers, probably more by the time I refresh the page.
How are you feeling about that?
I'm kind of looking forward to it, but a little bit nervous because it's a sandbox MMO, which means that you have the power to affect the world, which means that you have the power to affect the way other people play the game.
Okay.
And I really don't have a lot of time to devote to playing an online game all the time.
Ah.
So I will not be one of the people running the world.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to be living in somebody else's world, really.
I see. Which is what you would be doing anyway, because, I mean, you played WoW for years and years.
Right. Well, instead of the sandbox, they have the theme park model
right.
for WoW, which is you're experiencing their content that they give you, and nothing you do will change that.
Right.
And you will be experiencing the same content over and over again
right.
until the next expansion comes out.
Gotcha.
And, you know, you can vary it, and you can explore different areas. And, you know, in 6 years of playing, I didn't do a fraction. Well, I did do a fraction of what was possible to do in the game.
Right.
And there was a lot of things I didn't do.
Yeah.
So I never ran out of things to do in WoW. But it wasn't something that I had control over what I was going to do. It
right.
was I was going to experience what they gave me. Whereas the sandbox model is completely different.
So your concern is that a few who are going to devote a huge amount of time to it are going to be the ones who ultimately become the architects.
That's kind of how I'm feeling about
okay.
it. Unless they have like instanced terrain
right.
where, you know, somebody built a castle on this plot of land. So if that's no longer available, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if that is an instanced piece of land that I can also build a castle on, you know, that's cool.
Okay.
You know, it'll take me longer to build my castle.
Right.
And I won't have, you know, day-to-day control over my domain.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm, you know, even if I get highly involved in this, I'm still not going to be able to do it every day. But how about you? How do you feel about it?
I'm very ambivalent about it because, mm-hmm. for one, I feel like we don't need another fantasy MMO out there. But mm-hmm. The flip side of that is that if they come up with something that's really, really cool, then I would feel like a total knucklehead for not giving them at least the chance.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest problem that I'm facing is that I'm not a huge fan of Ryan Dancy.
You refer to his work on EVE Online?
Yeah. You know, he doesn't have the best of track records. And it's one of those things, it's kind of a tough call because it could be a situation wherein he just happens to have a vision that's so far ahead of the curve that it's hard for other people to keep up with it. But the flip side to that is you're playing to your crowd.
Okay.
And if you can't bring your vision to a point where the crowd can see it, then nobody's ever going to keep up with it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that's, you know, I mean, that's, like I said, Ryan Dancy is kind of my biggest, I'm hoping it's going to be good.
Well, EVE Online is still pretty successful.
Oh, agreed. It's just that, I don't know, I just felt like the stuff that he
That's
felt,
the only other sandbox that I know of.
Right, so. I think that, but I think what, the stuff that he brought to that was just not, was not what EVE needed.
Okay. Well, if you choose to go to the Kickstarter, I'm sure they'll still take your money.
I'm sure.
There are different things that you get for your different levels of pledges. You can pledge $5 and get see a video. You'll get access to a video.
Mm-hmm.
$15, you get a PDF, you know, and it goes on. 30, 50, 75, 100 or more, 250 or more, 500 or more, 1,000 or more. You know, they'll take it, whatever you want to give them.
Of course.
And there's different levels of what you get, you know, for your time and money, in addition to, you know, helping the game evolve.
Right. Which is cool.
So,
and really, I think a lot of that, they kind of piggybacked off the whole, what we talked about last time, the whole Shadowrun Kickstarter. So
yeah.
I think I'm very hopeful in and of the fact that I think gaming is going to benefit from a lot of these guys hopping on board the Kickstarter bandwagon.
Yeah. And the game itself is not going to be in the Pathfinder mechanics because
right.
Pathfinder doesn't actually have a license to use the D20 system in a video game. That's a separate license, and they don't have it.
Right.
So they will have different mechanics for, you know, character creation, combat resolution, but it's going to have the flavor of the Pathfinder universe.
Right.
So what else we got?
Flavor.
That's good Pathfinder.
That is good Pathfinder. Well, since we're talking about superhero games, within the last couple of years,
uh-huh.
we've had DC Adventures, and
Marvel came out recently.
Marvel came out recently, yep, with Margaret Weiss.
Mm-hmm. That is, I have the book. I haven't read all the way through it, but I have some comments on, you know, when we talk about gaming theory and crafting.
Okay.
I have some things to say about that. The DC Universe, or the DC Adventures game,
mm-hmm.
little bit of a disappointment to me.
Really?
They only had 4 books. They're only doing 4 books,
okay.
and that's the end of Green Ronin's license.
Okay.
They're doing the rule book, which is exactly the same, well, not exactly the same, but mostly the same as the Mutants and Masterminds 3rd edition.
Okay.
So you don't actually need both of them.
Oh, okay.
At least I haven't found anything that stands out as this is different.
Right. Other than the fact that it's licensed characters that we know
The artwork in the DC Adventures rulebook is all DC artwork. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing new. It's just they got access to the archives of DC's artwork
And,
you know, used it liberally.
Yes.
There is a two-volume list of heroes and villains. Mm-hmm. And the final book, which is not out yet, is the DC Universe.
Oh, okay.
So that's the entire product line.
Wow.
And the Amazon is listing the release date for the Universe book at July 10th.
Okay.
But they kept changing the Heroes and Villains release dates on Amazon. So I don't think that's the authoritative voice there.
That's what we like to call the tentative date.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the product bookmarker, mm-hmm. you know, for Amazon. It means almost nothing.
Right.
The thing that disappoints me about this product line is that this is going to take over 2 years to bring out all of the books, mm-hmm. and there's only four of them.
Yeah, that's,
you know, they could have done this in a year.
Easy.
And I would have, yeah, and I would have had, you know, really the ones that I care about were the Heroes and Villains Volume 1 and 2, mm-hmm. Because I don't know DC Comics all that well. I haven't really collected comics in about 20 years. I still read the trades from time to time,
right.
But I don't get individual issues. So there's a lot of things I don't know about these characters.
Right.
And I was really interested in running a Justice League, you know, some kind of one shot, and it took forever for the heroes and villains to come out.
Yes.
So that was frustrating to me. I've mentioned it before. I'm not going to gripe about it again, but that was a shortfalling of the game to me.
Gotcha. Are you still going to give it a try? Are you still going to do a one shot to see how it plays for you? Or?
Yeah, I'm actually playing a DC Adventures game at Origins.
Oh, great. Okay.
So that's a nice segue into our next topic.
Sure.
That Origins is coming up.
Yes, it is.
And it is next week as of this recording.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, let me check my calendar.
No,
yes,
right.
starts on the 30th.
Which is goes to a week from Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, and so it goes to June 3rd. Mm-hmm. So 5 days of gaming.
Yep.
And I will try to get some recordings from the con and maybe play some highlights of games if people will consent to being recorded during games. I'm not going to throw it down and sneak it in there.
Right, no, I understand. That wouldn't be cool anyway.
Yeah.
Do you want to try to do a report from the con where you and I Skype while you're there?
Yeah, that'd be great.
I can
take an hour or so in an evening and let you know what's going on.
Cool.
Also, going to Origins this year will be Will Wheaton.
Nice.
And Felicia Day.
Oh, very nice.
So we can ask each of them how it was to kiss the other on the guild.
There you go.
So that, yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to ask that.
Oh, I'd ask that. I'm sorry I'm not going to Origins. Hell, I would ask that.
Yeah, me too. I'd pay to see that.
Yeah.
So, and also Rob Schwalb, who is one of the designers of D&D, mm-hmm. 4th edition, and he was instrumental in D&D Next.
Nice.
I will be doing a playtest of the open playtest version of D&D Next at the con.
Oh, excellent.
I have played in two sessions of the Friends and Family playtest, and it's going well. I kind of like it. I like what I'm reading, and I like what I'm seeing.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so we'll see how that, you know, shakes out in the public playtest, the open playtest, because it's going to be different.
Once the open playtest is out, can we talk more about what you've done in D&D Next in the Family and Friends edition?
I'm going to have to check on the NDA for that, because I think that even after the open playtest is out, I'm still under that NDA.
Okay, because I'm curious. I have to tell you that I'm just incredibly curious. I'm chomping at the bit to hear the actual play that you have been involved in, so...
I don't know if
our tons of listeners are too, but I'm sure that if they haven't been involved in it, they also will be, mm-hmm. you know, gagging for more information.
Yeah, there were a couple things I didn't like. I didn't like the way one of the spells worked. I said this is inconsistent with everything else that's going on with the spells.
Gotcha.
That this makes no sense.
Right.
One of the classes was a little bit lackluster.
Which one was that? All right, you can't talk about it. Never mind. Sorry.
I'm not sure I can say that. So,
okay.
But it was looks to be improved in the open playtest.
Okay.
So we'll comment on that when it comes out.
I was going to say, you can probably comment on the open playtest.
Open playtest is open.
When we do the report for Origins, then we can talk then.
Yes, and I will... why don't we do the Origins Awards in... we'll recap the winners of the Origins Awards in the next episode.
Sounds great.
because it will have been done?
Yes, it will be a done deal.
Do you want to talk about the Origins Awards candidates for this year?
Let us do so.
Okay. I'm looking at the list right now, and it's embarrassing that I haven't played any of these, whereas last year's candidates, I had played four of the five top contenders.
Well, I have to say that looking over the list, I have only played one of them, and that is Airship Pirates.
Okay. That is in the category of best role-playing game.
Yes.
What is Abney Park's Airship Pirates?
Yes.
From Cubicle 7 Entertainment, the people who brought us the Doctor Who role-playing game.
Yes. And they also brought us something from last year's awards, as I recall.
And they're also bringing us the One Ring.
Oh, there you go.
Which is also on the best role-playing list.
I'm curious about this Cosmic Patrol.
Uh-huh.
Because they have run and played in a game called Danger Patrol.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure if that's along the same lines or not. I'll have to do some research on that.
Yeah. The other candidates are Arcanus by Paradigm Concepts, Ashen Stars by Pelgrane Press, Bulldogs by Galileo Games, Cosmic Controls, you mentioned, by Catalyst, which is the people who put out Battletech and Shadowrun and Cthulhu Tech. Giasa? I'm not even sure. It might be pronounced Giasa. It might be also pronounced Giasa.
That's true.
It could be anything. It's not a word that I'm aware of.
Right.
So. Kingdom of Nothing from Galileo Games. Leverage the RPG from Margaret Weiss Productions. Is that based on a TV show?
I believe
something?
That it's based on a TV show.
Okay. That's kind of odd.
Well, no, considering that they've got like Serenity and a couple of other things out there.
Is Leverage really a gaming kind of show?
It can be, because it's essentially a heist television show. You're given a problem, you know, you have to steal something or protect something, and then, you know, it's up to you to make sure that the thing goes off as executed, and then there are all sorts of different little things that come in and screw with you.
Okay, so it's like an A-team game.
Kind of. It's kind of like Fiasco.
Well, I'm interested now.
Yeah.
Okay, I will look for a game of that at the con.
Okay.
The One Ring, also by Cubicle 7, and Unhallowed Metropolis Revised from Atomic Overmind Press. Those are the short list here of best role-playing game contenders.
I have to say, just from the title, I'm interested in finding out more about Unhallowed Metropolis.
Uh-huh.
Do we want to talk about the best role-playing supplements as well?
Oh, we can talk about the supplements. There's Dragon Age Set 2, which I do have.
Okay. And Trail of Cthulhu, Bookhounds of London.
Also by Pelgrane Press, yep. Who also did Ashen Stars, so I'm wondering if those are connected.
And my friends at Bully Pulpit have put out Fiasco, the Fiasco Companion.
Mm-hmm. L5R 4th Edition, The Great Clans, a supplement from AEG. DC Adventures Heroes and Villains Volume 1 is on this list, but not Volume 2. I wonder why that
why
is.
Why is that?
Then we have no idea.
Then we have a three-shot from the D&D 4th Edition, Madness at Gardmore Abbey, the Monster Vault.
I played a little bit of that. That was actually fun.
And the Neverwinter campaign setting.
Yep. Monster Vault, I hear a lot of good things about from GMs, or DMs, I guess you can say that in for Wizards. A lot of people like the Monster Vault.
Cool.
Call of Cthulhu Shadows Over Scotland from Cubicle 7 is on the supplement list.
And my personal favorite of this list, Hero 6th Edition Star Hero.
That is for the hero system champions kind of thing?
Yeah.
I imagine?
Yes, yes, yes. But this is, of course, it's in its sixth iteration, and they've finally come out with the Star Hero supplement for it.
Yeah. The sixth edition books are freaking huge. They're bigger than, you know, the phone books that, you know, used to come to the house all the
champions
time.
Champions used to be.
Yeah. Well, the rule book itself is two rules. Like, one is the rules of the game, or two books. It's one is the rules of the game, and one is how to make a hero. Mm-hmm. And both of these books are, you know, like, about 3 inches thick.
Wow.
They're ginormous books.
Wow.
You know, strangely enough, they're not as heavy as they look. But it must be the paper quality.
I guess so.
Yeah, so, or they have two ranks of density decrease or something.
Nice seg there.
Yeah. So any of the other things on here you want to talk about? They have stuff for best board game, traditional card game, family or children's game.
I don't know. It's not my cup of tea. I usually just do the tabletop RPGs and some of the online games. So.
Yeah, I'm not terribly familiar with most of these products. There's some Clicks. There's a Clicks expansion in here somewhere.
Right.
I just saw it.
Right.
There is a... another WizKids Street Fighter starter set, which is interesting. BattleTech, another Catalyst product. The Wars of Reaving. It's a miniatures rules set. I'm curious about that because I've always had a weakness for BattleTech. Mm-hmm. And by weakness, I mean I suck at it.
They've drawn you in yet again.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So I'm going to play some of that at the con. Another Munchkins expansion for best game accessory. And dice earrings from Game Science.
Yep.
Definitely want to get some of those.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the Origins Awards, and we will highlight the winners in the next show.
Gladly.
Because that will be a done deal by then. Mm-hmm. That's all the news that I had.
All right.
Did you have anything else?
I had nothing else.
Let us go to our discussion about why exactly we are wearing our undies on the outside.
Excellent.
This is the heart of the matter.
In the heart of the matter this month, we are going to talk about superhero role-playing games. And I've played a few.
I've played a few as well.
What have you played, Pete?
I have played many things. I've played... my earliest game was Villains and Vigilantes.
Lucky Duck.
I know. And then I also, in the 90s, I played a variation of it called Living Legends that Jeff D. had put up online.
In the same system?
Yeah, it was an improvement on the old system, actually. He had called it Living Legends, and it was just really... I mean, it was fun. He never... I don't think it ever really went that far, but I've also played the 80s... Was that called Marvel Superheroes, I think? Or Marvel Heroes?
Marvel Superheroes was the TSR one,
right,
that was in the 80s,
I played that one
as well.
And then I played the DC Heroes one that was also in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
I played Champions.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I've played Mutants and Masterminds mostly at con games.
Okay.
I've played With Great Power.
Okay.
I've played Silver Age Sentinels, but I played this Tri-Stat version, so it reminded me a lot of Bessem.
Okay. That's the same system, right?
Yes, the Tri-Stat. Okay. It was from the old group called Guardians of Order, whom I miss dearly.
Okay. The Bessem is Big Eyes, Small Mouth,
yes,
an anime-style role-playing game.
Yes. And yeah. Guardians was at Origins back in 2005, and they were all wearing hockey jerseys, the Guardians of Order, and had the Guardians lion on it and everything, and I was jonesing for one of those, because
yeah,
they were Canadian-y. And then I've also, online, I've played City of Heroes. I was part of the beta test for the Champions online game.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've played the Champions online game. I leveled a hero past the beginner's set and then kind of left it there because, well, I'm not paying for it, right? So I can just come back anytime. And then I forgot my password.
Whoops.
Yeah. So in pen and paper role-playing games, I've played Marvel Superheroes. That was the first superhero game I had.
Nice.
I was intrigued by all the ads for Villains and Vigilantes in the Dragon magazines that I was reading, but I never actually found it anywhere or purchased any products or got to play it.
Right.
So I was kind of, you know, that was a big thing that I always wanted to try, and then, you know, it was gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Played Champions. I played the hell out of Champions.
I'm sure.
I played
we all did a lot
of Champions. Yeah. I mean, that was...
Mid-1980s, that was pretty much the only game in town, if you wanted to play superheroes.
I was like 88 to 93. I played a whole ton of Champions.
Ours was, I think, 83 through 86.
Okay.
I played a whole bunch of Champions.
I played Aberrant, but not in the Aberrant universe. I played Aberrant in a Heroes-style setting.
Okay.
The game didn't... I didn't make it to every game, and they kind of went off the rails, and like people stopped showing up. So,
So
I don't know what happened with that one.
Yeek.
And I've played Mutants and Masterminds. I've run Mutants and Masterminds. I've never played Mutants and Masterminds. Alas, I buy a lot of role playing games, and I've bought games that I haven't been able to play yet, like DC Adventures, which is different and distinct from the DC Heroes of the 80s and 90s.
Right.
There's a game called Icons, which is based on the Fate system, like Spirit of the Century.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also by Steve Kenson, who also wrote the Mutants Masterminds set and True 20.
All right.
I have recently purchased a game called... It's based on a earlier game called Godlike, which was about superheroes in the 40s.
Right.
But this one is called... It's called Wild Talents. It's a more modern alternate... present. It has a little history of the campaign setting, and it's like our history, but not quite.
Oh, because it includes the superheroes from the 40s.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
It's like these are things that happened because there were superheroes in the 40s.
Right.
And that uses the One Roll engine, which also powers games such as Monsters and Other Childish Things.
Oh, which you and I played, did we not?
We did. We did, in fact, play at Origins 2008, I believe. 2009. Or 2009, you're right. We've had that discussion. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait to try some of these games. I've bought Silver Age Sentinels, the D20 version, and the Tri-Stat version, and I haven't played either one of them, but they're, you know...
I personally like the Tri-Stat version better.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem to appeal to me as a D20 game. Looking at, you know, how the system works, and we'll get into that with superhero building. And I've also played with Great Power, but I blocked it out as a bad memory.
Yeah, no, we played that at Origins 2009 also.
Yeah, I think you and I were in separate with Great Power games, and I didn't realize that the game that you had talked about in a particular favorable fashion was the game I was sitting in
right. Until
afterward, because yes. I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, there were a couple of things in the mechanic that didn't make a lot of sense to me either.
Yeah, I felt like the game system itself was rigged to make you lose in the middle and win at the end, and it could not be avoided.
Yes, because it was following basically the story arc of any given Spider-Man comic book.
Yeah, I can see how that is,
yep.
But to have every game follow the exact same plot structure, I don't think that could be sustained.
And you'd never run a campaign off of that. That would just be a bunch of one-shots.
Yeah, it would have to be, because, you know, how many times can you do the same story?
That's true.
I mean, at least, okay, I'm sure it's different if you... You know, if you are a big fan of the game, but it didn't appeal to me in that way because I felt like the pacing was rigged.
Yes, and I felt the same way. I also, to be fair, I didn't have a whole lot. It didn't have a whole lot in its favor for me because I was the only one who showed up to actually play it.
Ooh.
And then there was a person who kind of wandered over, and she said, "I would like to learn how to play this, but I have to leave in 30 minutes to go off to a game that I've signed up for." So she sat in for a while, but after she left, there really wasn't, it was just me from that point on.
Okay. So. Well, that doesn't sound very enjoyable.
No, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as exciting as it could have been. So.
Yeah. Yeah. In online games, I have, like I said, the Champions online characters. Mm-hmm. I've even paid money for extras on the Champions online version, but I didn't, you know, they're sitting there now, not doing anything.
Yeah.
I played DCU online. I really couldn't get used to the interface, okay. And at one point I spent about a half an hour designing my hero's costume.
That's what I liked about City of Heroes, was just being able to play around with the, you know.
Oh, I love that. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I thought that was fantastic. And then I got in the game, and like within the first 15 minutes, I found an item which put boots on my hero.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I'm like, that's not what I designed. I'm a superhero. I don't want loot.
Exactly.
So anyway, that was a bit weird. It's like, okay, clearly my competence depends on my getting these upgrades and items to put on, but that's not how I designed my costume.
See, that's how I kind of felt City of Heroes, because at one point you got a cape, and a couple of my heroes I just didn't want a cape for, you know.
Yeah.
Plus the whole Incredibles thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, hey,
no capes.
It's not a good idea. Yeah. So you couldn't, there was no option to hide the cape?
I don't remember there being one.
Okay, because that's actually an option in WoW.
All right.
You can hide your cloak.
That might be an option in a later version of COH, but I didn't, I stopped playing, unfortunately, about four years ago.
Okay, so that's first impressions of games.
Yes.
Let's talk about what you design a superhero game to do. Like, what are you trying to do when you make a superhero game, or when you play a superhero game? What do you want out of it?
I'm looking, when I come up with an idea, I'm looking to either take the idea of the heroes that I grew up with reading Marvel and DC and putting them into a situation that would be culture shockish for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other thing that I try to go for when I design it is basically just go for the feel of when I first started reading the stuff.
No, what would it be about a game that would make you feel like you were in a comic book?
I think
any of the games done very well, or have any of them failed miserably at doing that?
It's funny because really the only one that I played in that I felt met the criteria, which is essentially, any given single issue of a superhero comic book is a hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got something's happened. This is what the big danger is, and you call in the Justice League or Avengers Assemble or whatever the deal is, and then you try to put an end to it. One of my favorite comics was actually a storyline from the late 70s, early 80s, where the Avengers are assembling because they're having, according to their charter, they're having their weekly meeting.
Okay.
And a bunch of the Avengers are complaining that they have to do this weekly meeting thing.
Okay.
Because they have better superhero-y things to do than do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Cap happens to be running the meeting, and he happens to notice that there's a letter that has just been delivered with the mail that says urgent.
Okay.
And so he finds out that there was a Chinese gymnast who's also an award-winning physicist who'd been kidnapped by one of the...
That's Chinese Batman right there.
Well, by one of the hoariest of all old stereotypes, the Yellow Claw.
Oh, no.
So they hop in the Quinjet, and they go off to the island, and before they get to the island, Cap looks at the Wasp and Vision and says, okay, I need intel. Go.
Okay.
And so they both, Wasp and Vision, fly in and come in from two different directions to get the intel.
Okay.
And then once they hit the ground running, he has people at point. He does all this different stuff, and it's really kind of a nifty pseudo-military operation. And then it all goes right down, you know, right to Poopsville because, you know, the Yellow Claw is one big bamf, and he's anticipated somebody messing with his island, so...
Okay,
but it was kind of cool. I want to capture something like that when I'm playing a superhero game.
Okay,
I've played a Fate game where we were all, you know, Joes, basically part of G.I. Joe.
Okay,
that had a similar feel to it, and I thought that was the closest thing that ever came to it. What I personally have played in, the one that came closest for me was Silver Age Sentinels with the Tri-Stat system.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a plus in its favor.
Right. Because there was a lot more lateral ability, I think. Mm-hmm. That, and I think the GM really had an idea of where he wanted. He had more of an outline than a written story.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could play with.
Yeah, that's kind of how I ran my Champions game. Yeah. When I ran that, I had some villains, mm-hmm. and I had their plan, but I didn't really have a lot written down. I don't even know if I had anything written down, to be honest with you. I might have had a paragraph.
I think that once you've become familiar enough with the comic culture, you pretty much write itself.
Right. Yeah. My biggest obstacle in running a Champions game and a Mutants and Masterminds game is making the action happen in a place that the heroes could get to quickly. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, for some reason, you know, action always happens in comics, like, right where the heroes are, or they can get there one panel later.
Right.
And it's, you have to do a little hand-waving with that.
Which is why it's great to have a whole bunch of stuff set in New York, you know, because you've got so many different heroes in New York.
Yeah, yeah. Or just, you know, wherever you have it, you know. I think one of the best ways that challenges are introduced in comics is the person is out in their civilian identity and they happen to see something.
Yes.
And with a team where they don't all hang out as civilians, that's kind of difficult, but you can introduce the plot with one person,
right,
and then bring in the team for the bigger fights.
Which I think is also a good reason you kind of follow the one comic I was talking about, which is they're all together anyway.
Right.
And then something mobilizes them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that's far enough away that they all have to hop in the Quinjet and go, you know, so.
Yeah.
The Blackbird or whatever.
Yeah. So the you're saying that you would do that in Silver Age Sentinels to get that feeling, to get that kind of comic book play feeling?
We had more of a comic book play feeling, and we also had a more team comic book feeling to it, because one of the nice parts about it was when we sat down and chose characters, we were given a heads up as to who was the sketchy one in the group, the one who could turn,
uh-huh.
you know, and stuff like that. And everybody kind of had a feel for who we were, and everybody was interested in playing, you know, and the guy who played the kind of shadowy one played it really well. And he did it.
Were you given pre-gens?
Yeah. It was a con
game.
Okay. So, yeah, the guy who played that, I think probably had the best moments in role-playing that I'd ever seen, including his redemption moment.
Excellent.
When he saves the team, when we thought that he abandoned us.
Like the Paladin in the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
Yes. Very similar.
Probably did more good than anyone else in the party, but always hated doing it.
Yes, exactly.
So, designing to make that happen, how do you feel Champions does in making you feel like you're in a comic book?
Champions makes me feel like I'm in the comic book in and of the fact that through the character creation, I really got a feel for who my character was.
Right.
The biggest problem that I had, and mind you, this was early Champions, the biggest problem that I had was the sheer amount of number cards.
See, I never actually had a problem with that. In fact, that was something that I enjoyed, was making up characters.
Oh, I mean, we all enjoyed making up characters. It was just that once you actually started to play, you had a million and one matrices to reference.
Yeah, you know what,
So.
I kind of took to it a little bit easier than a lot of the other people that I was playing with. Someone else ran the game for a while.
Gotcha.
So I did get to play Champions for a while, and he would make up villains, and after the thing was done, he would run the character by me, and I would say, oh, he couldn't have done this because you didn't buy this power in this particular way, so right. he wouldn't have been able to do that. And he was, you know, he was seriously asking me for help in making the characters.
Right.
But he felt bad about having, you know, basically cheated at the game by having the villains do something that was, you know, outside the scope of their paid for powers. So he ended up, after a couple of sessions of that, ended up just assigning 50 points called Chris Protection.
There you go.
So anything that I told him was not possible was covered by that 50 points.
See? Smart of him, right there.
Yeah. So it was just balanced.
Do you remember in the Marvel Superheroes game, there was a thing for Dr. Doom.
Oh yes, I know what you're going to say.
Dr. Doom is so smart; he's already thought of all the possible plans that the heroes could come up with against him.
Yes, anything
made a contingency against it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I always enjoyed that part.
That's a great power. I don't know how you would buy that in Champions.
I don't think you can.
Yeah. Well, it would be a variable power pool, maybe.
I guess.
Changeable retroactively? No, that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. Don't be.
It's a ridiculously worded power, but that's kind of how Dr. Doom is.
True.
Doom is smarter than you.
Exactly. And there's only one hero in the whole world that he's not smarter than.
Reed Richards?
Exactly.
Yep.
Because nobody's smarter than Reed Richards.
Yeah, you would think he would pick on somebody else and go, you know what, enough of the Fantastic Four. Actually, he probably did. So.
He has. But the big thing is that you have to take into account is the fact that Doom's ego cannot suffer Reed Richards.
So that's a 20-point disadvantage. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm still in Champions.
Snap out of it.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, actually, I never found the math in Champions hard because it was really kind of just sixth grade math.
I didn't find it hard. It's just that I found it tedious.
I liked you know, crunching arithmetic was fun for me then.
Which
so.
I have to tell you that the group that we were playing with, there was a guy who was involved with us who had no problem doing it. So a lot of times you would sit there and say, okay, here's the outline of what I want. Make it work.
Right.
And he would gleefully go home and, you know, the next day at lunch, he would hand you a character sheet and say, there you go.
Yeah. And Champions was different, substantially different from Marvel Superheroes. Mm-hmm. Because Marvel Superheroes said, you have lightning power. Here's a few things you can do. And if you think of anything else, make a roll and you can do it.
Yeah, I like that part.
Yeah. And that was fun. Whereas Champions, you bought the power based on the effect it had. And then anything, you know, the way you did it was just a special effect.
Right.
So those are completely different design models.
Yes.
I'm not sure how Silver Age Sentinels did it in the Tri-Stat version. Did you feel that you were weighted down with like keeping track of what you can and can't do?
Not really.
Okay.
Because they basically had a range. So if you purchased a power for X amount, you know, like a level 6, then you could do all the way up to like a Superman type thing. If you purchase it to a level 2, you could do up to a Batman level thing. If you purchase it up to a level 4, you could be an Aquaman type thing, you know? So like if you wanted to really be good at punching, you know, Superman's a guy who can punch Darkseid so hard that it actually knocks down buildings from the shockwave.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, I find Mutants and Masterminds to be kind of a combination between the two because you buy things with points, kind of like Champions.
Yep.
But you can add additional effects at, you know, a lower cost, and you can do things like push to use a power in a way that you can't normally do.
Yeah, you can kind of do that with this Silver Age Sentinels Tri-Stat edition too.
Okay.
And that there's a lot of leeway with the destruction with the description of it.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the way the guy who ran it had us do it.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not written that way, then you know, if you played it that way, that's the way it should be, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What about you? What are your goals when you walk into? What are you looking for when you start to design a campaign or a game?
I would like people, you know, to move quickly. I want people to feel like when I'm running a superhero game, I don't want people to feel like they have to wait around the table for their turn, even though they do every time. You know, every role playing game is probably like, you know, kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But I want to feel like the action's moving quickly. And later in the times that we were playing Champions, the group that I was playing with discovered, you know, all the numerical exploits, and it stopped being fun at that point.
Gotcha.
So I don't like to see numerical exploits in a superhero game.
Right.
They were doing things like, well, you know, if I throw all my points into skill levels in defense, I can never be hit.
There you go.
And it was really super cheap to do that.
Oh, yeah. That's super cheap in two meanings of the word.
Yeah, yes. That's pretty much it. Yeah. So, you know, I've got a defensive combat value of 11, and I've got 20 skill levels. You need a 31 to hit me. You subtract 31 from your roll. I can't remember exactly how it goes. But it was, you know, you could be unhittable with a minimum of points expenditure. So.
Well, my question is, how do you want the field to be? Because I'd already said that I want it to be either like, you know.
Sure.
Whatever, ducks on water or whatever kind of feel.
Yeah. I want to feel that I'm doing something cool when I play.
I think that's what we all want to do.
Yeah. Well, I want to feel like, okay, I played a speedster in a Mutants and Masterminds game.
Yes.
And I felt that, okay, I can run really fast, but I can't really do a lot with that. So I had to, I really had to work hard to come up with creative ways to use speed within the rule set.
Okay.
And I want that to be easier.
Okay, I understand that.
I want to play a game where if I'm fast, I want to know that I can, you know, I can clothesline somebody with a crowbar, mm-hmm. you know, without having to worry about, you know, what that means for the rules, you know, like, oh, now I take damage. Wait, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Well, says so right here. If you do a run by, you take damage.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think you'd figure that out after a while.
Yeah, or, you know, I resorted to throwing garden gnomes at ballistic speeds. That was my trick in that game.
That's a fun idea.
Yeah.
Did you carry around the garden gnomes? Did they follow you?
They were there.
Oh, okay.
They were there.
Oh, gotcha.
We were attacked on the grounds of our school. It was kind of like an X-Men thing.
I see.
So I in fact, I said to the GM, there's garden gnomes there, and I used them. And he said, cool. So
there you go.
So that's the kind of thing I want to be. I want a little bit of narrative control if I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to exploit my powers in ways that a superhero would,
right,
without having to worry about the GM saying, oh, no, you don't have any garden gnomes listed on your character sheet.
Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah, you know, I want to, you know, I want to be able to be creative, I guess, is what I want from a superhero game.
Yeah.
And room to interpret my powers in ways that are new and, you know, maybe something that I might see in a comic book. Because there are things that the heroes do in the comics that they don't do every issue.
Right.
You know, like ripping up the ground, you know, the Hulk ripping up the ground under somebody and yanking him really close. He doesn't do that all the time, but he's done it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a creative use of powers. That's, you know, I would like to see that kind of thing modeled in a role-playing game.
That would be cool. That would be very cool. The interesting thing about everything that you're telling me about this is that now that you've told me it, I don't think you would have liked Villains and Vigilantes very much. Although, it's hard to tell, because it did allow you a certain amount of freedom in the actual role-playing part, but in character creation, it was just gonzo.
Well, we're talking about the 80s here, and I don't think I felt that creative in role-playing in the 80s.
No,
I think in the 80s, I wanted to beat things up and take their stuff.
Well, and you can do that in Villains and Vigilantes, but it also allowed you a certain amount of, I think, was it Jeff D. and Jack Herman?
I'm not sure who the other fellow was, but Jeff D. did the art.
Right.
So.
Well, they both worked on the system together, too.
Okay, all I know is that I saw Jeff D's signature on all the art.
One of the things that cracked me up was during character creation, your character creation was done completely by randomization.
Uh-huh.
You rolled dice.
Right.
There
were rules for that in the Marvel Super Heroes game for TSR as well.
Yeah. But it was kind of wild because you could sit there and I think six tables that you could randomly generate powers from. So when I ended up running Villains, I dusted off my box set and brought it out in the 90s with my group in Ithaca. And I ran a kind of tongue-in-cheek story. And I said, okay, so here's what we're going to do. You're going to roll a six-sided die to determine which table you're going to roll your first power off of.
Nice.
And then you're going to roll whatever dice necessary.
So you played it out that way?
Yeah. And so they ended up with this amazing blend of powers. And then they had to come up with a character that embodied all these powers.
Okay.
And they did it. They pulled it off really well. And of course, we had, you know, they had some silly names and stuff like that. But we had a blast playing it. It was so much fun to play.
You know what? That story reminds me of another game that I bought and made up characters in, but never got to play.
What's that?
Heroes Unlimited.
Oh, wow!
That was a Palladium game.
Yes, I remember the cover art.
Yes, and that was the same kind of thing. It was like there were a billion charts to look at, and your character creation was, I rolled a 16. Okay, I'm a robot.
Yeah, exactly. Android body, but I have all these magical abilities.
Yes, and you can do that. And I can breathe underwater and stretch.
Exactly. And I have skills of some kind.
Yes. Marvel Superheroes had a random character generation system in addition to the many, many heroes, Marvel heroes that were statted out. And we played a game that was done that way.
Oh yeah.
And that was fun. And I actually liked the way Marvel did it. I mean, it was the same kind of thing. Right. It was completely random, you know, goofball crap. But you know, if you think about the Marvel heroes, a lot of them feel like they're designed that way anyway.
No, it's like somebody took a bunch of powers, put them on a index cards, threw them into the air, and whatever landed face up.
Yeah. I mean, like, what does tracking scent have to do with regeneration?
Exactly.
that's the kind of thing.
Retractable claws.
Right. Right. Well, they rationalized those two, you know, by his healing regeneration ability is, you know, the why he could survive getting the claws in the first place.
But why should he need them if he's, you know, if he's based on an animal that has a tracking scent anyway?
Yes.
And why does he need musky?
Because comics.
Oh, right. Sorry.
So random character creation is not a totally bad thing.
No, it's not a totally bad thing, but it can make for some really gonzo play.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. So, you reminded me of that one. And I actually played, I didn't play, I made up tons and tons of characters in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game in that, which is kind of super heroic, but not really.
Yeah.
Those were the only Palladium games I owned.
Yeah.
I'm told I got out at the right time.
Oh, I think you did.
I hear lots of things about other Palladium games. So anyway, with this in mind, you know, what kind of play style do you see in a superhero game? Do you personally like a street-level Batman kind of game, or do you like rooftop flying around blasting and punching demigods?
I kind of like the street-level type thing. You and I have both played Spirit of the Century, and we've talked about it before. The Fate system and yada, yada, yada. We, being my friends Judd Storn and I, had talked about a Batman game like that called The Spirit of Gotham.
Oh, cool.
And...
Well, let me stop you there and recommend the Icons game.
Oh, okay.
Which is a Fate game for superheroes.
Right.
So, go on.
But the way we kind of fed into it was because we'd played a game called Diaspora, which was a space opera based on Fate.
Okay.
And we had all individually played Spirit of the Century.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just looking for something where you could do that kind of descriptive skill / power talent.
Modern day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, put down like things like Wealthy Ninja or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was the sort of, I mean, I kind of like situations where you can meet things on a face-to-face level. There's a scene in Avengers comic before Civil War and all that other nonsense happened that,
Civil War never happened, sorry.
That Luke Cage is a member of the Avengers, and the Quinjet lands in a bad neighborhood in Detroit.
Okay.
And the Avengers all spread out. And so a news crew shows up, and she's like, oh, Captain America, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. And Captain America goes, you need to talk to Luke Cage about this.
Uh-huh.
And Luke says, we're not going to do anything but stand around. It's part of the new Avengers thing wherein we're going to pick a inner city spot at random, and we're going to spend a day there. And anybody who has the temerity to try to do anything illegal during that time is going to be dealt with by the Avengers.
Then technically they're going to have to deal with themselves because vigilantism is illegal.
Agreed.
Oh, sorry.
Agreed, but the point being is that, no, because at that point they're being backed by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Uh-huh.
So they have police powers.
Okay.
So that's the long and the short of it, pretty much, is that I like the idea that you can bring in a team like the Avengers on a street level. And the thing that disappointed me was that never played out. Some other big thing happens and that draws the Avengers away.
Oh, of course. It would be a boring issue if they're just beating up thugs.
But I like the idea that you can bring in guys like that because there was nobody really super hardcore at the time. You know,
uh-huh.
you had Cap, you had Luke Cage, I think you had Wolverine.
Yeah, he was in there for a while. I don't know if he still is.
Yeah.
Like I said, with the trades, I've read the first, you know, the first two Avengers Reassembled or New Avengers or whatever it's called.
Right. So it's just, you know, I like the ideas of bringing things on the street level. The other things that I like to do is take things into the outer space.
Uh-huh.
I like things like where you have to face Thanos and you've got like an Adam Warlock and Star-Lord
right.
and guys like that.
That was
side.
A Champions game I never got to run. That was like a campaign that I had in mind that never got off the ground, so to speak. I was going to have the
the heroes, you know, start the campaign where the heroes investigate an alien ship and the Earth blows up.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that would be, you know, it would be like they have no home. They are the last humans in the universe. So
that's kind of
and do kind of like a, I was kind of inspired by Starjammers when in the the X-Men series.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
I had I was in a game. I was in the DC Heroes game that I played in was Legion of Superheroes.
Okay.
And so the guy running it, Brian, had us go in search of, I think it was, there was rumors of a Kund invasion. And as we were looking for the Kunds, we came back and someone had stolen Earth.
Oh, nice.
So we had to track down what had happened to planet Earth. And then, like, all the horrible things that happens to planet Earth when it's taken out of its orbit, you know, and things like that. It was just kind of, it was pretty cool. It's a shame it was just kind of a mini campaign, but still.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential. I mean, there's a lot of, I had a lot of hero campaign ideas that I just never got to try.
I understand.
Like one of my ideas was to play, it didn't matter the system, but make up the characters as at some point, okay, first nobody had powers, mm-hmm. and then at some point people started having powers.
Right.
Kind of like Heroes, the initial concept of Heroes, not what it turned into.
Right.
The new universe from, you know, the 80s Marvel, there was the, right. you know, the white event, which, you know, suddenly people had some powers.
Yeah.
So I wanted this to be the background of the, you know, the world is exactly the world you know up to the point where this event happened and now you have powers and you don't know anybody else who has powers or, you know, maybe have them meet beforehand or whatever. And just drop that day's copy of the New York Times on the table and say, okay, what now?
No, that would be very cool.
And then, like, you know, see what the characters want to do in the world they know, you know?
You also had an idea that you had talked to me about 2 years ago. Where it was essentially kind of a Watchmen feel, where somebody had essentially the Star Brand from New Universe.
Right.
And that
Can you tell
was,
I really kind of like the New Universe?
I can't blame you. And what Warren Ellis did with the New Universe, I'm just sorry he never got a chance to complete it. I'm kind of disappointed with Marvel that they didn't run with that. I like the idea that you had you had one actual supernatural being.
Yeah, and people
who's dying,
with...
and he's got to pass it on to somebody, and he's got a bunch of street-level superheroes to choose from.
Right. Well, my idea was actually not that they didn't have powers, but they kind of all had a small power. Like maybe one could turn invisible. Maybe one could see through walls, and that was it.
Maybe one had super good aim.
Yeah. You know, this would be a good team for that fellow.
That would be a good team for that fellow. That's what I'm saying.
You know, maybe one could lift 800 pounds. And, you know, that would be the kind of peak of superhero potential. It was kind of like a, I don't know, the 30s and 40s kind of style of hero, right. but in the modern day. And that's all the heroes there were, except for this one guy.
And as,
you know,
and as he was passing, he's got a... I like the concept that you come up with where in that this power eats you up.
Yes, he's got to get rid of it.
Human beings are not designed to carry on this power indefinitely, so he's got to pass it on to somebody, knowing that he's doomed that person.
Yes.
You know? And I think that's an excellent... God, that's a great storyline. That's a great...
And yeah, I don't think I could do it as a one-shot, which was what I was trying to conceive it as, but I think it would have to be a mini-campaign.
You could do a mini without a problem, but that would really be something. Plus, you know, you've got that kind of... You've got the double conflict going on wherein you've got the group who want to compete and actually have that power because that makes you alpha.
Right.
But the flip side, you know...
Is it kills you.
Is that you know it's going to kill you.
Right.
You know, so how badly do you really want it?
Right.
You know, hey, I can tip over a bus. That's okay by me. I don't
have
this power.
I'm cool with that.
I'm good with that.
I can step behind a streetlight and turn invisible. You know, that's all I really need.
I can shoot an arrow into the barrel of a gun. That's all I really need.
Oh, you superheroes and your arrows.
I didn't say boxing glove arrow. Just
yeah, you need a boxing glove.
No, you don't.
I just recently saw the Errol Flynn Robin Hood movie. I did not know that the original Green Arrow costume was so close to that.
Oh, completely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it never even occurred to me that it was a direct copy of the costume.
Oh, yes.
I mean, more green, but that's about the only difference.
Yeah.
He's got the same beard, same facial hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, superhero games.
Yes, superhero games.
We play them. We like them.
We do.
I had an idea for a system.
Talk to me.
Okay. Here's my idea for a system, and this is if, with the release of D&D Next, I'm kind of hoping they'll open up the 4th edition system.
Oh, okay.
Because I kind of had an idea for a few modifications for to make it a superhero game.
Okay.
Because I think one thing that 4th edition did very well.
Yes.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, it kind of already is a superhero game, only it's in a fantasy setting. But go
ahead. That's kind of where I'm going with this.
Yeah, okay, sorry, go on. Didn't mean to step on you.
No, that's okay. Oh, spoiler! One thing I think 4th edition did really well is design the encounter. And comic books really stand or fall on the encounter. Mm-hmm. And I think you could make a really fun, really action-filled superhero game based on 4th edition. Well, 4th edition right now has at-will powers, encounter powers, and daily powers. And I think you could reflavor that into a superhero game by making them, say, panel, page, and issue. Or even panel, chapter, and arc, or something like that. Something more comic book flavored. So a panel power you could use any time you want.
Nice.
You know, every panel you appear in, you can use it.
Right.
A page, you know, a page power or an encounter, you know, basically is like a page power, something you can, you know, if let's say the comic is just about you, you can use it once a page, you know. So a page being basically an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And issue is something, you know, that is analogous to a daily power. You can only use it once in a while. It's the Hulk ripping up the pavement to yank a guy close to it.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
No, I understand.
And I think, I don't know how a superhero game would work in a class-based system, but I think you could pair out the classes and make it more ability by.
Right.
But, you know, it's just something that I really haven't gotten a lot of chance to work on, but it's something that's been kicking around in my mind for a while.
Be kind of cool to give it a shot, because that sounds really excellent. That's an excellent freaking idea.
Well, thank you. I really hope they open up 4E, because I'd like to throw some
stuff. I hope so, too,
up.
Because this would be great, since the whole idea behind kind of doing this is that it's a team.
Yeah.
You know, 4E is really team-oriented, and superhero games should be team-oriented.
Yeah. And everybody's supposed to be able to get something to do.
Oh, yeah. You know? No, definitely. Wow.
It's designed to prevent the thing that happens sometimes in 3rd edition and 2nd edition, 1st edition, is that, you know, somebody might be out of spells or out of, you know, abilities and not be able to do something in a particular situation. 4th edition was designed to prevent that from happening at all. And and I think that lends it to a superhero game.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my idea.
That's a great idea.
Well, thanks.
I'm kinda,
let's run with it.
By that. We should get our own Kickstarter together for that.
You know what? I'm patenting it right now. Filing the patent and send.
There we go.
Okay. Mine.
Thank you, dear.
Holy crap, I just got a subpoena from Wizards.
Ah, see? They're
everywhere. You can't get away with anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everywhere. So, anyway.
Wow.
So, I've talked quite a bit.
And I've also talked quite a bit.
You haven't talked enough, man.
I think I've talked quite a bit, especially when I was when you let me riff about the sort of things that I would like to see in a game.
Okay, I guess you're done then. I'm hanging up on you. No.
Oh, I see how it is. Fine, I'll just do the outro by myself then.
Okay, you're going to have to come over to record it here.
No. Yes, I know.
All right. So anything else we wanted to talk about in his superhero games?
I just wanted to touch on the idea of Spirit of the Century and Adventure being kind of proto-superhero games. How they never seem to get a nod for, because they're based on the literature that preceded.
Right, the pulp action,
you know? So,
pulp adventure, right.
And I think when you take into account the abilities that a lot of these guys had, it makes them superheroes.
Right, you know, like Doc Savage.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Mandrake the
Magician. I based a True 20 character set in a Flash Gordon setting on Mandrake.
Oh, there you go.
I played Mandrake in Flash Gordon.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so that was, we only got a few sessions out of it, but I had fun.
That's cool.
Last piece of news that I have about superhero games.
Mm-hmm.
Is I am going to be playing Marvel Heroes, Marvel Heroic Role Playing. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I have been invited to play with one of the writers, Dave Chalker.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to it because, to play with him, maybe I can ask him a few questions about his role in the game. And he's going to be running it. And I really wanted to get into one of the two sessions of Marvel Heroic Role-Playing that they were having at Origins, and they were sold out by the time I got online.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I was there at 12 o'clock on the day it opened, and it was gone by the time I could bring it up on the screen.
Oh, I'm sure that people just dove on that like so many vultures on a roadkill.
So I've looked through the book. It looks like a lot of fun. And also, there's not a lot of concern about character creation and character balance.
Okay.
Like your Daredevil hero and your, you know, well, we'll say the bat fellow. will be just as effective in a fight as, you know, the Silver Surfer, right. You know, because their powers are going to work differently and they're going to be doing different things.
Right.
But the game really seems to get that, you know, everybody's doing something in this in an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And the character creation, I mean, it gives you a lot of basically any Marvel hero you'd want to play in the story that, you know, the supplement is for.
Mm-hmm.
It'll give you the stats for that character,
Yeah. You
know, at the time that story came out.
Nice.
Like they're doing the major Marvel crossover stories as game supplements.
As a matter of fact, my friend Judd is working on the Civil War.
Okay.
Supplement,
cool.
So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one. Even though I didn't really like the storyline, I'd like to see the, you know, I'd play it differently.
Maybe we can hit him up later in the summer to be a guest.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And in creating characters, there's no point value systems for anything. It's like, you know, I reckon it'd be about this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not dealing with massive stats. You're dealing with dice pools and different sided dice to add to a dice pool.
Right. We had discussed that in an earlier.
Yeah, you're right. We did. Yeah. So, well, it's more relevant here than it was there. So I'll say it again. So I haven't seen another game system really work with, you know, with not caring so much about game balance and making sure everybody's, you know, on a particular, you know, number value.
Which, I gotta say, makes me happy.
Yeah, you've seen Icons, or you've seen Spirit of the Century, and Icons is a very similar system where it's, you know, whatever story points you can add to your characters, those give you combat advantages.
Right.
So I've got the book, and I'd like to play it, but I don't know a single person in the world who would run such a thing for me.
I would gladly, Christopher.
Would you really?
I would.
That would be... Oh, that's so unexpected.
But here's my stipulation.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I will run this for you if you come to visit me.
I will make it happen.
Okay. Because I'm also going to run something for the rest of you knuckleheads down in Maryland when I come down to visit next.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. I'm holding you to that.
I know.
Okay.
I'm holding you to the fact that if you want me to run it, you got to come here.
Okay. We'll do.
Okay.
So that is my opinion on superhero games.
And mine as well.
Okay. Well, why don't we tell the good people out there how they can get a hold of us?
Of course. You, of course, can always follow us on Google+.
You can go to our website, rulezeropodcast.com.
You can email us at rulespodcast@gmail.com.
You can email me at chris@rulezeropodcast.com.
You can email me at pete@rulezeropodcast.com.
And you can follow us on the Twitter.
Yes, you can.
We are Rule Zero Podcast on Twitter.
And I'm trying to make sure that we get some tweets out there fairly regularly. I think Christopher is as well.
Yes, once in a while I'll throw one out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of blog posts that Pete has written.
Yes.
That are on our website. So go ahead and check that out over and above downloading the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know. We'd love to hear some feedback. We get some good feedback on Twitter. We haven't gotten too much in email, so we'd like to hear from some people.
Yes, please don't be shy.
And give us your opinion on superhero games. Tell us what we forgot to say.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you wanted us to say. Tell us how we're absolutely barking mad and completely wrong about the system that you love that we took apart, or the system that we love that you think is absolute rubbish.
And the other thing is bring up systems that we haven't heard about or that we don't
know
about.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're looking forward to hearing all of you.
Most definitely.
And until then,
game on.
Game on.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.
Neil.